I grew up down in the Bega Valley, about 20 k's north of Bega. And as a child, I didn't really kind of think, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you live down near the Victorian border. But I don't remember that we actually drove down to the Victorian border at that place, down the Princes Highway. It was only many years later that my first memory, at least, is my uncle was living in Albury. And so we went over to visit him and made the journey across the Murray River and into that other place, that other state of Victoria. And I don't think that the land is all that different on one side of the Murray to the other, or that there's, you know, much kind of difference between the two states. And I think for most of my life, I didn't really think much that was different between going to Queensland or New South Wales or South Australia or any of the other states. Until 2 years ago, when, of course, we began to experience that, hey, states are real things, and that those lines on maps can actually be personed by police officers or army, and that you can be prevented from crossing from one side of the line to the other. And then last year, during the second lockdown, of course, people in Campbelltown discovered that it wasn't just states, but it was also local government areas that mattered. And so going to the Mount Annan Botanical Gardens, you had to go into another local government area to go into those gardens. So that was prohibited during that period. And so suddenly what seemed to be once just be a line, an arbitrary line on a map, began to be much more significant. But Jesus today is telling us that these lines should not separate us, should not divide us. So often we love to make those distinctions to keep people away, to keep people separate from us. But that's always a mistake that we make. The Samaritans were despised in part because they were almost Jewish. The Samaritans had been part of the family, part of the community way back when. And it was only when the northern 10 tribes fell under the conquering might of the Assyrians in 722 that part of the land that had been such a significant part to the northern kingdom now began to be populated by other communities. There were still some of the Jewish people living there, but the Assyrians pumped a whole lot of refugees into that area as well, and they began to intermarry, and they began to bring their own practices of religion and faith. And so the Samaritans began to practice in a way that was, again, similar but different enough that the Jewish people who lived down south just thought, you know, that they're weird, they're strange, they're different from us because they're on the other side of that line. They're in a different reality. And so we see today, as Jesus continues this road trip, as he's continuing since 951, when he resolutely set his face towards Jerusalem, and until the end of chapter 19, we'll continue to be on this road trip. And he's now made it, you know, it'll only take a few days by walking, but he's finally made it to the border between Galilee and Samaria. And there are these 10 men who all have leprosy. They're all separate, but they've all been brought together because of their common experience of being alienated and separated. We certainly know that what the disease wasn't leprosy. Hansen's disease hadn't occurred in the Middle East at this point in human history. Archaeologists, as they've examined bone records and as they've looked at skeletal remains, there's no sign at all of the degradation that happens from Hansen's disease per se. Perhaps another century later was when the disease finally did make it to this land. And so whatever this disease is, it's not even leprosy. It's obviously still infectious in some way. It's still something that you don't want to catch and you don't want to have. But these 10, like all so-called lepers at the time, had to be separated, had to be removed from the community to prevent that risk of infection. And again, we've experienced what that was like, if people having to go into isolation and all those kinds of things. You know, we still haven't changed much from that period. And yet that experience that we all know so well of not being able to visit family and friends, not being able to hug, not being able to be in the presence of those that we love. This was the stock standard experience for these people, just being separated and alienated. It's to such an extent that even those political divides, some Jews, some Samaritans, that wasn't enough to prevent them from coming together into this kind of loose sense of community, as the 10 of them did what they could to, in order to survive, in order to be able to provide some sense of normalcy within this weird and strange and dehumanizing experience that they were faced with. And so when this itinerant preacher comes passing by, they take the chance. They run at it. They grab the opportunity. They throw themselves in him, you know, still at a distance, calling out to him, "Master, have mercy on us." And Jesus doesn't interact with them, it seems, any more than simply telling them, "Go and do what the law requires." The book of Leviticus is quite clear. You know, one of the roles of the priest in the book of Leviticus is to be able to determine between types of mold and types of skin disease and all kinds of things that I'm very grateful that I'm not a Jewish priest to having to examine spots on skin and mold on the wall and all those kinds of things. And they needed to do that because in order to be restored to Jewish society, they first had to pass the test of the priest. And it was only after the priest had certified, yes, there doesn't seem to be any manifestation of this disease anymore, and so the person is no longer a risk, and they're able to return from that period of isolation and be restored to the community. And so it makes sense that they go and to present themselves there. But somewhere along the way, we don't know whether it's only a few meters away from when they hear this or whether it's much further along their journey, but they realize, they notice, oh my goodness, my skin is now back to normal. I'm no longer infected. I'm no longer covered with these horrible spots and diseases and scars. I'm now able to be reunited once again. And so after the nine Jews go and present themselves to the priest, I'm sure they had some vague thought of going back to Jesus to give him thanks, but undoubtedly that was also a long way to go back. And that chance, that opportunity to go and to be with their family, of course, that seemed to be the highest priority for them at this moment. But this Samaritan, he comes back. He returns and throws himself at the feet of Jesus. Face down in the dirt, he's there because his life has been changed. His life has been transformed. And even though all of them were cured, this man is fully healed because it's in that expression of gratitude, then that expression that allows the inside and out to match, where he's that desire that begins to well up from the depth of his being and is able to be expressed and manifested within his life. That's when the full transformation happens in this man. That's when he's able to experience that full gift and that full grace. Gratitude has that power. Gratitude is able to change us and transform us from being just people that presume that all these things will just happen naturally to people that slowly begin to realize that no, it's in offering thanks. It's in recognizing that I couldn't do this by myself. I need the support of the community. I need others around me who are able to be part of this journey with me. That's when this transformation happens. Borders and distinctions are necessary in our society, but they're rarely helpful to the extent that they separate us and prevent us from experiencing that gratitude that we long to have. It's only when we move beyond ourselves, when we see from the perspective of the other, that we're able to find that freedom, that we're able to find that life. So today, we can take the chance just to ponder upon the people in our lives, to ponder and to give thanks to our parents or teachers or mentors, people that have been really influential and instrumental in creating us and shaping us to be the people that we are, offering our thanks and gratitude for them, offering our gratitude to God for the salvation that he's offered to us, for the life that I'm now able to experience and to manifest in the world. Changing that attitude from just the presumption that I deserve this and I need this to an attitude that just simply expresses, I can't do this and I couldn't do this by myself. But thank God I'm not alone. Thank God there is a community. Thank God there are other people that are able to join me on this journey. Today, maybe it's a chance just to send a message to someone that has influenced us in some way, someone that has been there in our lives, to express our gratitude, to express our thanks to that person, to at least say a prayer for them, to at least express that gratitude to God that God has placed that person in my life, and that my life is so much richer and so much more blessed because of their existence. Today, let's begin to express that gratitude that bubbles away in our hearts and allow it to be manifested and revealed fully within us, so that we also can be transformed and changed to be the people that God wants us to be.